From the Missouri School of Journalism, welcome to Global Journalist. I'm Jason McClure. On today's show, we're going to shake up our format a bit. In lieu of our regular focus on undercovered international news, we're going to bring you a couple of special interviews with international journalists. In a few minutes, a globetrotting Swedish journalist is going to give us her take on how freedom of the press is facing new and diverse challenges in different parts of the world. But before we get there, we're going to hear about the life of a truly cosmopolitan global journalist. Fortuna Calvo Roth was born in 1934 to a Jewish family in Paris, but was raised in Lima, Peru. There she fell in love with the news business during World War II and came to admire American newspapers like the New York Times and the St. Louis Post-Dispatch. So she left Peru and came to the Missouri School of Journalism in the 1950s, where she managed to graduate with honors at just age 19. She went on to a distinguished career as a correspondent for a number of major Latin American newspapers and later as a news executive for the Brazilian publishing group Vision. But journalism was just one chapter of her career. She went on to enjoy success as a theatrical producer, a publisher, the co-founder of an audiobook label. She's won many awards over the course of her career, including most recently a Missouri Honor Medal from the Missouri School of Journalism. She spoke recently with global journalist Kathy Kiley.
Fortuna, you have been a reporter, an editor, a broadcaster, a theater producer, a publisher, and an actress. I wondered if you could start by telling us a little bit about your early life, your family.
I was born to a family where my parents were very different and very respectful of each other's talents. My father was a self-made man. My mother was a highly educated person with 8 languages. So she sent us to an American school. This was during the Second World War.
And where are we now?
We are in Lima, Peru. I was born in Paris, where my parents met and married, but my father was a businessman established in Peru at that time, not born there, but he had lived there and he wanted to live there the rest of his life. Took my mother, who adjusted. She never felt too much in her own skin there, but she adjusted admirably.
And where was your mother from?
My mother was, both my parents were born in Turkey, but different parts of Turkey. My mother was sent to the North American boarding school in Istanbul for high school and junior college, and then sent on to Vienna to study and to Paris, where she worked as an interpreter. By then she had 8 languages. My father was born in a different part of Turkey, near the Bulgarian border. During the Balkan Wars that started in 1913, about 12 or 13, his father was a grain broker. The crops were ruined. There was no business. And after a while of my father being sent every day to get bread, and there were snipers all around, he said, well, I've gone to buy bread long enough, I will leave. And he came to New York. From New York, where he had a wonderful life for 2.5 years, someone he met in New York talked him into moving to Peru, which he did. After a few years, he was well off enough to go on trips to New York and Paris, and that's where he met my mother. And they were married a week after they met. As I said, he took her to Peru. They used to come back to meet, to visit my mother's relatives in Paris. And they stayed long enough, so I was born in Paris. But actually, I was raised in Peru. And I was sent to an American school, like my mother had before. So we spoke 3 languages right from the start. French, Spanish, the first one was Spanish, then French, and then English.
Did you speak Turkish?
No, they didn't speak Turkish themselves. They had left very early before the modernization of Ataturk. And they could speak a few, they managed a conversation the first few years, especially when they didn't want us to understand what they were saying. But they gave that up.
How old were you when you decided you wanted to become a journalist, and what inspired that?
It was, I think, the Second World War that did it. We had people in Europe And we followed. There would be some letters here and there coming from Paris. Afterwards, the family was evacuated, or they left themselves toward the south of the country, and they were in hiding during that whole time. So we followed the war on the radio. There was no TV, and in the evenings on the BBC. The noontime was the SO reporter that was sponsored by Standard Oil and a big company. And my father made sure to be home. People used to come home for lunch in those days. So he made sure he was in time to listen to the news at 12:55, 5 minutes. It was all about the war. And in the evening, we had the BBC of London. And we heard, Big Ben telling us it was 9 o'clock Greenwich Meridian time and time for the BBC in Spanish. They had perfect broadcasters, really beautiful voices that told us. So to me, the news world revolved around the war. And I thought that after the war ended, that would be the end of newspapers. Because radio, yes, because we heard a lot of music. But newspapers, that meant the war. And my sister and I would say, what are they going to fill newspapers with? Will they exist? And I was so relieved to find out they existed still after the war. But then I learned a little bit more as I grew up, and I wanted to be a foreign correspondent.
So you told me that your father wasn't too keen on this or you having any career. Tell us a little bit about that and how you got around him.
I got around him by telling him that I would go on my own, that I had saved enough money for the first year, and that I didn't need his approval, which was not true, because I wasn't 18. I was 16 when I started talking about it and 17 when I left. So I would have needed his approval, but either he pretended not to know or, he dismissed it. And instead he said, what are you going to do the second year? You've told me you have enough money to pay for your tuition, for your fare, and for your room and board the first year. What are you going to do? And I said, I've heard that everybody in the States that are students wash dishes in the cafeteria. I can do that too. So that didn't sit very well with him, but he thought I'd get over it. When we were at the airport, he said, I will pay for your education, but just could you do me one favor? I said, what is it, Dad? Study something decent. I said, Dad, journalism is decent. He said, no, teaching would be more decent. Why don't you be a teacher? I said, no, Dad, I want to be a journalist. And at that point, he said, okay, I respect that.
So you're tuned into Global Journalist. I'm Kathy Kiley, in for Jason McClure this week. Today's show features one of our periodic series of interviews with distinguished writers and authors. Today's guest, Fortuna Calvo Roth, a trailblazing journalist who recently won a Medal of Honor from her alma mater, the Missouri School of Journalism. Tell me a little bit about what was it like for somebody who had really traveled all over the world like yourself, coming to Missouri back then when Columbia was a lot smaller than it is today. Was it a culture shock?
Absolutely. Somehow I thought of the United States through the movies as a combination of New York, Los Angeles or San Francisco, and Florida. I could not, I wasn't going to go back because I wasn't going to tell my father that he was right and I was wrong, because he kept saying, do you know what you're doing? I would say, yes, of course I know what I'm doing. But the people I first met were so warm. They really, I'm in touch with about three of them I'm in touch with others from Missouri. But the ones that I met when I first arrived in Columbia, I'm still in touch with them.
You have had a remarkably successful career, starting with your early rise up the ranks of magazines and going on to all sorts of other activities. But you encountered a fair amount of roadblocks that had to do with prejudice. Can you talk a little bit about what happened and how you handled that.
When I went back to Peru and met socially the city editor of one of the large newspapers, modeled after the Herald Tribune. Beautiful paper, if you remember the Herald Tribune, gorgeous front page. And I said, I admire your paper. The only thing is that why are there so many style errors? Why do you have problems with spellings, punctuation, typos? How many people in your copy desk? And he said, what's that? Well, they didn't have a copy desk. They don't have one today, you know. Even the Times has eliminated that, which is terrible, I think, because it was invaluable. So I explained what a copy desk was, and I said, I have my manual from the University of Missouri School of Journalism. We use the AP manual, Associated Press. I said, I could translate it, adapt it. He says, wonderful. What shift do you want? We have such, such, and such. I chose 4 to 12 shift, which was a problem with my father. He would wait up for me at night, but that's another story. And I started. I was there for a few days, and then the owner publisher was in Washington. And when he came back and found out there was a woman in the newsroom, he would not admit it. Not accept no women. The city editor said, I cannot fire her. I just hired her. And he said, I have no problem firing her. He called me to his office. I saw texts that he had translated from our textbooks in Missouri of professors. And I said, I recognize these. You have them in Spanish, but these were my professors. You have a modern paper. You have a modern outlook. Why do you have such an outdated outlook when it comes to women in your newsroom? He said, well, you would intimidate my boys. I didn't understand that. I was still quite young. I was 20 years old when I started there. I said, well, if you mean language, because I knew journalists spoke roughly, I said, maybe I can teach them, your people in your newsroom, some words that they don't know and I know. And of course, he didn't mean that at all. He thought that I would distract them as a woman, and it had to do with sex. But I didn't understand it at the time. So after trying to convince him, he said, no way. There's no way that you're going to work in my newsroom. You can work in the society page. I didn't accept. End of story. Years went by, not too many, actually. This was in 55, I guess. Yes, 1955. Jump forward to 1959. And now he is the Minister of Economy and Prime Minister. He's in New York to talk to bankers and then go to Washington, D.C. And I'm sent to interview him.
And you're working for whom?
I'm working for Vision magazine, the Latin American news magazine, headquartered in New York. So I'm in the business section. He's the Minister of Economy, so I'm sent to interview him. He did not recognize me. We conducted the interview in those days with a pad and a pencil. And I closed my notebook when I'm finished. And I wasn't going to bring anything up. It wasn't professional. But he said, Miss Calvo, I found out that you are from Peru. I said, yes, sir, I am. And that you have studied in the United States. Yes, sir, I have. Well, aren't you ashamed of yourself to be living here when your country needs you? And I said, oh, Mr. Prime Minister, I am so grateful to you for having given me the opportunity to thank you. Because you may not remember me, you obviously don't, but I remember you because you fired me a few years ago right in your office. And he was beside himself. He could not believe it. Really, 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 I said. He said, well, I've changed my mind. You can come anytime. You can become the editor of the Sunday supplement. And I said, no, sir, I can't do this anymore because I'm married and I am very happy in New York. I'm really, as I said before, I'm grateful to you.
A reminder that this is Global Journalist. I am Kathy Kiley in for Jason McClure this week. On this special edition of the program, we're talking to Fortuna Calvo Roth, a 2018 Missouri Honor Medalist who helped pave the way for a generation of women journalists. A native of Peru and a resident of New York City, she joins us now from the studios of KBIA, Mid-Missouri's public radio. Fortuna, sexism was not the only kind of prejudice you encountered in your career. What else did you have to overcome to succeed?
Well, before the Civil Rights Acts of the mid-60s, I could have theoretically sued my employers on three counts, gender, age, and religion, First Amendment. When the post of editor-in-chief came up, the publisher called me and said, there's a vacancy, I know you're next in line, I know you have seniority as managing editor, and I'm going to tell you why you will not be getting this job. When I finish, you'll see that I'm right. You'll agree with me. And he said, the first reason is you're too young. I was not 30 years old. Number two, you're a female, and our subscribers are 99%, men. And the third one, you're Jewish, and we go to an area where everybody almost is Catholic. So first I said, you mean I can do the job, because I was really doing the job of acting editor-in-chief, without the title? He said, yes. Okay, I said, I understand. It doesn't matter that I'm this young, it doesn't matter that I'm Jewish, and it doesn't matter that I'm a woman. Right. You understand? Yes, I understand, I said. And as he was sighing a sigh of relief, I said, and you can have this chair tomorrow morning because I'm not going to be here. And at this point, he said, wait. We can discuss it. It's not an open and shut case. In a couple of weeks, we have a newly created position of chairman of the editorial board. And the person is, and he named a man who had just stepped down as president of Colombia, one of the then few statesmen, truly. He had not enriched himself. He needed a job. He had been a journalist before. He'd had a magazine in Colombia. And the publisher figured that a Catholic from a very Catholic country would choose a man. He said, let's wait for the new chairman of the editorial board. Let him choose. He will be, directing editorial policy, and the new editor will work with him. And I agreed. He arrived, and after a very short time, he went to the publisher and he said, I cannot work with two. I had a co-managing editor. I cannot work with two co-managing editors. I need a straight line of command. So they explained, the publisher explained to him the reasons why I could not do the job. And he didn't think too much. He told me the story himself. I learned it from him. He giggled as he told me that they had given him those three obstacles to my being editor-in-chief. And he said, as to being 28 or 29, I was president the first time because he had been president twice, but not consecutively. I was 35 when I was president the first time. I think it's a job that's a little more important than this one. And the second one, he said that she's a woman. I named the first female cabinet minister. She was the minister of communications. I also think that's a pretty important job. And as to the third one, well, she's Jewish, I'm Catholic, but I've worked with her a few weeks, and she's a professional, he said. I do not think that that's going to interfere with whatever her job is, but we're all fallible. If she ever does, I will write an editorial for the other side, making it right. And that was the end of the argument. It never came up again. I was immediately made editor-in-chief. I worked with him in great harmony for a number of years.
Having gone through all that, what do you think of the Me Too movement today? Are you surprised that this is coming up again now?
I'm
or do you
always
think it's
surprised.
Unfinished
it's not,
business?
It comes up every once in a while. I think that when women, of course, I support any movement that is going to empower women. I'm a little concerned about the way it goes because the power is still with the men. I don't think this movement has the leadership to understand that it goes beyond. They're going this way and that way, too many directions. They have to, I think, concentrate on the power factor and unite in that and understand that men are not our enemies. We just want to have a seat at the table that is on the same basis, to have parity. And that's what we're after. And too many issues get in the way, too many emotions get in the way. I think it should be very straightforward.
What is your advice for young women starting out in journalism today?
She has to have a passion for journalism. She cannot be thinking, I can do this, I can do that, I can do that. She has to believe that even though there are less and less jobs, she will find a place there. And that this is what she wants to do and nothing else. If they have several other interests, I would advise them to go elsewhere, to go to seek those other interests first, because it's very hard. It was hard then. It's harder today in many ways. It's not harder for a woman so much anymore, except at the very top echelons where it's still hard.
That was the journalist, actress, director, and publisher, Fortuna Calvo-Roth, speaking with Kathy Kiley. A reminder that you're tuned into Global Journalist. If you want more of our program, check us out online at globaljournalist.org. There you can find our archives and coverage of underreported international news and human rights issues, as well as our special interview series with journalists in exile. You can also like us on Facebook, where we live stream, follow us on Twitter, subscribe to the podcast on iTunes, or see our video cast on YouTube. For the second part of this program, we're going to hear from a prominent Swedish journalist. Stephanie Zachrisson is a producer and reporter at Swedish Radio, where she produces the in-depth international affairs show Conflict. She's worked as a correspondent in the Middle East and reported extensively on Brexit from the United Kingdom, as well as the future of the Northern Irish peace agreement. Our Kathy Kiley caught up with Zachrisson while she was on assignment reporting on the U.S. in Missouri.
How you've traveled, how many countries have you reported from?
20, maybe.
And how do you find press freedoms? What do you think the state of press freedom is in the world today?
I mean, I've traveled extensively in Europe, and there you have, you know, still a good situation. You are respected as a journalist. People want to talk to you and whatnot. Whilst you have other areas, such as last summer I was in Gaza, and you get these basically rules applied to you that they say, well, you're not going to be able to report on this or that because...
This is the Israeli government or the...
No, this is Hamas. So, I mean, Gaza is in practice run by a terrorist organization, Hamas. And, you know, you're not able to, for instance, report on the situation. They have one of the highest youth unemployment rates in the world. And obviously, I wanted to talk to young people about unemployment and what you basically do if you're a young person in Gaza and you aren't allowed to leave by either Hamas, PLO, or Israel. And you can't really, you know, get a job within Gaza. So that has, you know, made it a lot more young people are using drugs. But since the usage of drugs is obviously illegal, you're not really allowed to report on it. And even if I would do that, because, you know, I can collect my material and then leave and then broadcast that from my safety of Sweden, my fixer, translator, the people I talk to are still there. So for me, it would be, you know, unethical to report something like that and put those people potentially in danger. Same with, you know, LGBT stories from that particular area would not be accepted either.
What do you foresee for the coming years, and what are your biggest concerns?
I think currently, as a journalist, one of my concerns is freedom of the press and attitude towards media, because I know people don't always think we do a good job, but a good job isn't just, you know, reporting what you think is, like, our job is to put forth critical questions towards, you know, governments, authorities, and make sure, you know, to keep them in place. That's kind of, you know, the basis of journalism. That's what we're supposed to be there for. We're supposed to hold them to account. And for some reason, that some people do not understand that that's what we're there for. We're not there to cuddle someone, even though, you know, you personally might agree with the politician, you're still supposed to hold them to account and question what they're doing. And I sometimes feel like I spoke to a voter yesterday here in Columbia, Missouri, who she called journalism at the moment as that we're fiction writers. And that just, it tells me two things, both that we have failed, but also that the audience doesn't perhaps always understand our purpose.
And do you think that is just in the United States, or do you see that in other countries where you travel as well?
Everywhere. Is there a reaction? Everywhere. Yeah. Yeah.
And what do you think is the biggest factor driving those attitudes?
I think it's different in different countries. I mean, obviously in Sweden, we have these yearly polls that kind of measure the public's trust in different societal institutions. And particularly Swedish public media, as the Swedish public television and radio are still very high on top, together with, for instance, IKEA. And, you know, we're still able to keep that, but I don't know what's going to happen to that, because we are also seeing, this issue of people turning against the old school media, the mainstream media, and turning into these inward bubbles in social media where you don't necessarily get a view that, I mean, we need discussions, right? We don't need to just get the same opinion pointed towards us at the same, all the time. That's what develops us as people, I believe. I try and, you know, when I'm here in the States, I watch multiple different TV news stations because I want to hear, okay, so what are these guys saying? What are these guys saying? And what's being, you know, pushed out there to the audience?
Stephanie, thank you so much for joining us today. We appreciate your being here.
Thank you for having me.
That's going to do it for this edition of Global Journalist, a production of the Reynolds Journalism Institute and KBIA Mid-Missouri Public Radio. Many thanks to Stephanie Zacherson of Swedish Radio and Fortuna Calvo-Roth for joining us. Kathy Kiley is our executive editor. Aaron Hay is audio engineer. For all of us at Global Journalist, I'm Jason McClure. Thanks for tuning in.